the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 75, recorded Friday, January 25th, 2013. Trust me, I'm a tech.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. Thank you so very much for taking a half an hour to an hour out of your week and joining us. With us this week, her name is Dawn Mead. Her title, Goddess of All Marketing, AV, and Tenor Drums. How are you, ma'am?
Very good, thank you.
She happens to be with a company called NetAV also. I'll explain the tenor drums in a second. George Tucker is from World Stage. He is the engineering coordinator. He's also, Dawn's the left half of my brain, so George is the right half of my brain. How are you, sir?
No, I'm just fine. So does it leave you, you're the medulla oblongata or something? What is that?
If that, dude. Seriously? No. I'm the brainstem. No, Michael's the brainstem. I got nothing else.
Be the heart and soul.
Yeah, Adrian's the heart and soul. He is the senior systems designer for Avitexture. He's also a relatively recent defector from the great Midwest to the great out east. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
This week we're going to talk about a whole lot of stuff, including Atari sort of going bye-bye, but not really. And that's because all of us are of a certain age, which probably means we all played Space Invaders and, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back on Atari. Something about, it's the age-old discussion about whether or not to buy physical media, whether or not to just stream and stuff like that, so we'll kick that around. Also, the Microsoft Surface Pro, and that's in air quotes if you can't see me, and you can't because I'm not recording the video, it is going on sale. But first, one thing that Miss Goddess of All Marketing and AV and Tenor Drums has in common is our constant vigil that we hold for OLED. Is that accurate, Ms. Dawn?
Oh, yes. I cannot wait to get one.
Well, this comes to us from hometheater.com, and it's an interesting question, and honestly, this is from because of CES and because of all the 4K that came out of CES, and George and I did a special for CE Pro about 4K and learned an awful lot about it. The question is this. My head exploded. OLED versus 4K Ultra HD. Which technology do you prefer? So, Dawn, we'll kick this off with you. Which technology do you prefer and why?
Well, I prefer OLED simply because it's just going to change the way we approach video in form factor. OLED is thinner. It can be made flexible. You can, instead of trying to engineer solutions, like if you're trying to put video around a pole, for instance, for a customer, or a curved surface, you can just slap a curved OLED screen on there and take care of it. It's thinner and lighter. And, I mean, you know, the whole vision of it 10 years ago when they were first bringing out the technology was, you know, someday you can go to Best Buy or wherever to get your screen and have it rolled up like a poster, bring it home, unroll it, and stick it on the wall. Now, I don't think it's going to get quite there, but that form factor, the fact that it's going to be so light, so flexible, and give so many more options, that's what really excites me. Although, I will say this, I'm getting greedy. I'm getting to the point where I want a 4K Ultra HD OLED, because they're not mutually exclusive. One's the form factor, the technology that makes the image, and the other is the resolution of the image. So there's no reason you can't have both.
Well, you just blasted this guy's article. You are correct, though. And that was going to be my response when it got around to me is, yeah, I want
both of them.
No, you're fine. No, it's perfect. Because, yeah, you're right. It's not like you're asking me for, you know, chocolate or vanilla. It's, you know, chocolate or, you know, waffle cone. Well, I want both.
It's called Neapolitan.
All right, Adrian, you give it to me then. OLED or 4K or 8K Ultra HD. I don't care. UHD.
Well, I look at it as, you know, the content really doesn't exist in any sort of mass production, so it really doesn't matter. We just, you know, most consumers, if you want to talk about, you know, consumers, just spend a whole swack of money buying that high definition television and all those bells and whistles and Blu-ray, you know, forced upgrade, right? So is someone going to turn around and go, oh, I need a new TV because it's ultra 4K or ultra HD or I need to have it? Probably not.
Some of them.
Well, the early adopters, you know, like my father-in-law and other people are probably going to go crazy when they, you know, they see the big giant screen, you know, like Westinghouse. Like, where did Westinghouse come into all of this? That's scary stuff. So to me, I'm undecided. It really doesn't matter to me. I'll you know, go with the nice screen I've got until it blows up, and then I'll look for something new. But for industry-wise, you know, we're going to start seeing the push probably in the next 2 or 3 years when that CEO's just walked by and, you know, has been bought, sold, and all the bells and whistles goes, I want this in my boardroom, or I want this in here, and then we're going to have to contend with it. When we looked at the article, I mean, it wasn't really an article. It was kind of like, here's some bullet points that happened at CES and give us your opinion. And you know, so I did the little vote thing and they've only done 1,100 votes and change. And, you know, 21% of the people go, they want, you know, the 4K. 33% want the OLED. And then about 28% are in Don's boat. They want both. You know, they want the 4K and the OLED screen. And then someone says, hey, 4% of those, I want the 8K. And then, you know, 13% of the voting public in this article said they were undecided. So, to me, I don't think it matters at the end of the day, because it's going to be when you can actually buy the stuff and when there's really content to see it.
Well, and that's a very good point. George, one of the things that came out of the special we did for the fine folks at CE Pro is the fact that 4K actually gives you a reason to like 3K, 3D. And don't throw anything at me, but it does. And so is that in combination, like Dawn and I said, that in combination with the fact that it's an OLED screen, and you know what, I'm sorry, I love emissive technology, and I'm going to get really geeky here and really engineering. My whole thing with plasma over LCD is the fact that an LCD is a freaking technological stained glass window. All right. And I don't care what the technology is when it comes to LCD, it's really, really hard to get blacks and blacks and really, really deep blacks when you're emitting a light through it. So when you're hoping for a light bulb to, you know, the light to pass through it to create blacks, and that's why plasma to me will always be superior to LCD. Well, then you got OLED, which is emissive just like plasma is. And you got the thinness and the flexibility, like Dawn said, and then, oh yeah, let's throw the UHD in there. So, all of that said, which one do you prefer, or is it? It's you're going to throw the whole it's not exclusive thing at me.
I'd like to say that it's not exclusive, although it depends on the OLED sizes. I mean, right now they're talking about maybe 84-inch. You know, okay, there's what they're mentioning, a Samsung that's at 110. That's when 4K starts to make sense, I think. Right? Because 65-inch, I don't know if it's going to make that much difference to you side-by-side, really. Right? I mean, and every time we talk about this, and we did the special, the guy said to me, or said to us, that it was about that OLED will be what 4K needs, given this. And he didn't say this, but it had to be the right size. But 4K is a content methodology, and OLED is a display device. I know they're related, but it's a little different, isn't it? Well, I mean,
it is.
Asking if you want one or the other to me sometimes makes me think, well, no. We can have 4K on something else.
He did say also that he saw 4K, and Don, this will get you excited, and me as well. He saw 4K walking hand in hand with OLED, just as flat panels were ubiquitous with the term HD. So think about 10 years ago whenever you bought a flat panel, the rise in popularity of HD mirrored the rise in popularity of flat panels. Let's just say, you know, flat panels in general. Now, that did not mean that just because something was a flat panel meant that it was an HD TV, right?
Right.
And just because you had HD didn't mean you had a flat panel. I mean, you could get, you know, a big screen, rear projection, HD television. You could get all sorts of things that were that produce an HD signal. Same thing here. He sees the rise in popularity of OLED being directly tied to the popularity of 4K UHD. So as one rises in popularity, the other one will as well. And so that, to me, is really kind of exciting. The other thing is, and it's kind of our next story, is the fact that Sony is starting to come out with their first 4K home theater stuff, right? We had Rich Fregosa on last week, and he went to CES, and one of the things that was interesting to me is Sony's position. Let's just put it that way. We spent last year on this show and in other venues kind of giving Sony a hard time because they feel that it felt, at least to me, like they had lost their way, right? CES 2012, they had just got done saying, yay, OLED, and yay, all this stuff. And suddenly at 2012 CES, they suddenly had something called Crystal, Crystal LCD. And you couldn't touch it. You couldn't mess with it. It was just Crystal, and you couldn't see it. And the one thing that Rich said to me is that he went up to the Sony display, the Sony guys at CES this year, and asked where the Crystal was. And they acted like they didn't know what he's talking about. They have gone back to, yay, OLED. And so, George, is this kind of they're saying, yay, OLED? And also, here's our first foray into 4K.
No, I think you have a solid point there. You know, it's the partly the attraction of the medium as well as the content improvement. I mean, granted, there's not much 4K out there yet. I don't know if there'll be anything soon. I think you'll see it more on the commercial and visualization side first, but before you see it in the consumer side. And by visualization, I mean like the flight simulators for training, the military stuff, the police training stuff. That's where I think the 4K especially, and maybe even OLED, will be the at the forefront. And then as that becomes sexier and we get more consumer content, that's when it'll break. Just like with the flat panels in HD. There was lots of HD content out there, but it was very esoteric. I mean, even up to about 4 years ago, you had the HD network, mm-hmm. which there was attraction was. They did even the news in HD, you know, and they had these art shows and these very esoteric, you know, public access, but on steroids with HD. that it was the attraction of getting an HD television. But now it's everywhere. You can't not get HD. I mean, it's very hard. I still have a non-HD cable box for my old Sony Bravia just because that's what's in the playroom, and I'm not going to upgrade it until it dies a deadly death.
You are subjecting your children to substandard television?
Shame Please, they watch you. Stuff on their little iPods. They don't
care. Yeah, that's a whole other issue. Our kids are just MP3s and compressed video. It's saddening. Don, is this a good idea for Sony? I mean, George mentioned the fact that, you know, some of the 4K stuff is going to be a little esoteric at first. I see that almost that plus and then some. You know, some of the military stuff is already at 8K, so they've already left us behind, you know, in doubling that.
Right.
But is this a good idea for them to kind of get back into the swing of things, maybe?
I mean, somebody's got to do it, right?
And why not Sony?
Yeah, I mean, it gives them definitely an edge if they're like the first one or one of the first ones to jump in there. I'm just thinking back several months ago at this point, we did a show and we were talking about, I guess, the Red cameras that mm-hmm. were like the super high resolution. And at the time, the whole argument devolved into, why are we making the content when there's nothing to display it on? Well, why are we making the displays if there's no content for it? you know, and so it comes down to when you've got the technology, somebody's going to make the jump. And Lord knows Sony over the years has the name and the name recognition and the financial backing various times, depending on their stock, you know, to handle it. So, you know, good for them. I'm glad to see them back away from whatever that crystal mess was and, you know, jump on board the OLED thing because that's my pet technology. But, you know, I think it's a good move on their part. I do question the fact that the article says they're home cinema systems, because you're right. It's not going to hit. I mean, it seems the Resi market has been driving a lot of our industry for a while, but at the same time, it is the virtualization areas, the medical simulations, the flight and battle simulations. Those are where the high resolutions are happening now. Not, you know, Nemo 3 or you know, toys, you know, whatever the movie might be that they're coming out with from Pixar or whoever, that's not going to be in 4 or 8K at this point. So I do question them going home cinema, but it is a good move. I mean, we're going to need it. For those of us in the DC area that do a lot of federal work, we probably already need it, you know, or needed it. So go Sony.
Yay, Sony. All right, Mr. Boyd, when are you going out and buying a new Sony home theater system to play on your 4K?
Probably not for a very long time. I mean, the specs look great. I mean, they're going to have three flavors, but you don't get the real bells and whistles unless you spend the, you know, the big giant price point. You know, as with anything upscaling, it's garbage in, garbage out. So, I mean, your Blu-rays are going to look pretty decent. DVDs, depending on how they mastered, will look absolutely horrible. And if you have a VCR or anything else, you know, it'll just look atrocious. And, you know, that's the thing. What was really interesting that I found, you know, in the last couple of weeks is Kaleidoscope, you know, the great little company that, you know, has extremely expensive but fun toys, is coming out with their own content distribution system for, you know, probably 4K content and other things. And you know, everyone seems to forget that Red has just released or going to be releasing their player that's going to have access to a dedicated content distribution system that will have 4K content, you know, and it has a whole bunch of other little fun things to plug into it. So, I mean, I think the content will slowly come. You know, the display devices will slowly come. I mean, we can, I mean, already, I mean, we can, you know, if you want to have something that'll show 4K without having to worry about anything, I mean, you can get a couple projectors, you know, Christie and Sanyo and Panasonic and so on have got 4K capable projectors. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to make sure you've got the right input cards and the correct connections to make it happen. So, you know, Sony coming in with a consumer entry device that will bridge the gap. Okay. How much is it going to cost? They don't say, and I imagine it's going to be a pretty penny. So wait, we'll just wait and see and, you know, see what happens with Sony. They may do some interesting things. I mean, the photograph of it is very iPod looking.
It is a little, it's a little iPod and slightly futuristic.
Yeah, it's like Samsung and iPod and Apple had a kid, and it was the Sony system. You know, it's those colors from both those companies, white and that weird aqua blue.
Did anyone else notice though the substitute sound that you can put on this thing?
No.
There's in the middle of the article, quote, while in football mode, pipes in pre-recorded audio captured from a Brazilian soccer stadium. I was like,
why?
I'm sorry, did Monty Python just step into the paragraph? And now for something completely different.
Yeah, that was a little odd.
I like the rejoinder, what happens in tennis? I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Oh, there are all sorts of bad ways I can go with that one. All right.
Although I do get to say the article does have a point. You can substitute canned crowd noise for the idiots commentating, you know, commentators on some of these. If you watch certain networks covering football, you'd be glad just to hear cheering as opposed to whatever's coming out of their face.
You mean like the network that's covering the or giving us the Super Bowl this year? Anyhow,
did I say that?
No, well, I did.
Isn't there a stadium?
I used to work with one of those guys. Anyhow.
Isn't there a stadium that pipes in crowd noise?
Oh, there's all of them. I mean, there have been rumors for years, George, about various teams piping in, especially the domes. I mean, outdoors, it's harder to do, but the domes, of which I live, you know, half an hour away from one, has been rumored for years about that, about the Rams, the Vikings, the Lions, various places, yeah.
I'm just fortunate to be from a football city and live in a football city, both of which don't need fake crowd noise because we get it.
And my favorite team
and
doesn't either.
And that's just from the tailgating area.
Right? Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Let's kick Microsoft around a little bit. Nah, sort of, not really. I mean, here's the thing. The Surface Pro comes out next month, right? And the Surface Pro, if you don't know what it is, it's their big boy. It's their big tablet. Their competitor to the iPad and to the other Android tablets. And here's the issue in our world of BYOB, bring your own BYOB. Be right. Reverted back to my college days. bring your own device. Let's just stop with the acronyms. And as ubiquitous as Microsoft is, and as late as this thing feels, from my vantage point, this thing could be dangerous. And here's why. Yes, it's $1,000. It's $1,000 for the big boy, right? $900 for the 64 gig one. However, it's Windows 8, and everybody who buys a computer here in the new future that's what they're going to be used to. And so, in my world of education, you have professors who like things simple. They like to bring their own toys in, and hey, this tablet, which all the kids are raving about tablets. Only it's the wrong one. This tablet has what I have on my office or my home computer. So why not bring this? So, Adrian, is this going to be a huge deal for guys like us who have to make these pretty devices talk with our projectors and our laptops, or our projectors and our flat panels?
Potentially. When I look at a lot of these, you know, the BYOD idea, and I was talking to a gentleman at Extron about this, is, you know, as long as these devices have some way to get the content out, hopefully it's wired, you know, and we can plug into it, that's, everything's fine, there's no problem. It's when everyone wants to do it wirelessly that we have to come up with these ingenious ways to bridge that gap, because no one likes to play nice with anybody. When I look at Microsoft and their whole Surface and all of this stuff, the whole point of their Pro version is you're supposed to be able to run full versions of Windows products, you know, or products that run on Windows 8 on this thing. So could you run AutoCAD on it? Probably. Could you run, you know, Office and you know, all of those you know, processing and memory power, you know, things like Photoshop and so on these things. Sure. Is it going to be a big change? I don't know. I mean, if Microsoft wants to send me a free one for me to play and test, send it to me, care of. You know, what was interesting is when you look at the RT, they're talking about how they're going to come up with another version of the, you know, the cheaper model, and they're not going to force you to buy the keyboard. You know, because that's kind of been one of the sticking points with the Surface, was in order to get the most use out of it, you had to buy that keyboard cover.
The clicky keyboard.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, it's an extra $130 on top of it, which was, you know, people were like, it was really kind of throwing out the pricing scheme on this device. So it'll be interesting to see how these things start going through and how people start adopting them and whether or not they'll make some inroads. They made this announcement on top of what they just recently said is they're going to be helping Dell go private in some shape or form.
Huh?
Yeah, well, Dell's been buying back stock the last little while, and Microsoft has been kicking in some money to help that happen.
Do you know why they're doing that?
I'm thinking potentially is that they may be working on something to either blow Apple or Samsung out of the water in terms of a portable device, or who the heck knows what.
I just thought they're going underground because they're the ones who killed Analog. I'm just saying, you know, Go ahead. Sorry.
This is going to be interesting the next 6 months in the terms of mobile devices, because some of the other big things that came out of CES, if everyone was paying attention, was the speed and processing power of mobile chips that a lot of these mobile devices run on, and just how we're now seeing more and more, bridging devices, cheating devices into getting content out of your mobile phone or out of your tablet device or whatever it is to a display. So, you know, there's all sorts of these little companies that are jumping out of the woodwork that, you know, you plug it into your TV and now I can send whatever wirelessly from my whatever device I have to my television. And I think in the next 6 months, we're going to see a lot more of these kind of, bridging devices showing up and more and more access in these tablets, in these mobile devices, that it's going to start causing us headaches, because, you know, it's going to happen where someone walks in and going, I want to plug my phone or I want to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And how do I make that happen?
George Adrian brings up a good point, not just about the Surface, but about the whole, you know, bring your own device thing. In the live world, I'm imagining you don't have that, but you guys also do a fair amount of installation. So is this something that you have to worry about?
Yes and no. I mean, we have a couple of installations in which the head of technology in that institution is actually instituting that. There you go. Two times I did that.
Very nice.
And we're kind of excited about it, because when we talked to this client a number of years ago, we were suggesting something of the ilk, but it wasn't there infrastructure-wise. You just couldn't really support it, right? So, yes, we do go up against it. In the changing world, actually, though, there are lots of BYODs. There's a Mackie DL1608 mixer that actually uses that iPad as its main control surface. You can connect to it Wi-Fi and stuff like that. So if you have an iPhone, you could kind of do it. But, you know, for mixing, you need a bigger surface.
On purpose?
Yes, on purpose. There is no other part of that. What my thing with these things are is that they are devices. They are content or control devices. But something like the Surface, at least the real one, and Adrian hit on this, it's a productivity tool. I can't write and create on an iPad. Maybe it's just me. I would have to have that little keyboard that some of those little, you know, ancillary manufacturers make for the iPad. But I have to have that keyboard. Maybe I'm a fossil, but was sort of what excites me about this Surface, except that it has Windows 8. And I keep asking, how much for the downgrade? Because I could use it.
Oh, nice.
Right. Yes. Now, I know that Windows 8 gives you the ability to go back old classic Windows look. Yeah, Windows. The Surface just doesn't work for me.
All right, Don. First of all, tell Georgia he's a fossil. And then second.
Actually, no. I'm backing up George here. For those of you that still play on Twitter, yesterday was our AV chat, which we have every couple of weeks. The topic was this very topic. We were talking BYOD, we were talking tablets, we were talking smartphones. And a couple of people came up with this idea that, you know, what do we do in meetings? Some people were talking about bringing their iPads or whatever. I usually bring a little tiny netbook that has a proper keyboard on it. And that was kind of the prevailing attitude was, you know, the small, lightweight things like the tablets are great, but sometimes we just want to type. I believe that's what Verl from Revenue said. He says tablets are good enough for most meetings, but people still want to type things. Krista Bender, if some of you are familiar with her, she even said, and I quote, I think Surface-style solutions will become more prevalent. It gives you the best of both worlds without accessories. Because, you know, Chris Neto brought up Droid tablets with a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse add-on and everything. That worked too. You know, mm-hmm. And if the Surface works the way it looks on commercials, and if you buy the hype, and if you've played with one in real life, if it works just that slick, it's the solution. It's what we're looking for. I got to back George there. It's not a fossil thing. It's like where most people, it's a productivity thing. I have a tablet that I love, but I can't use it in meetings because I can't type.
Right.
Quickly.
I have to agree with Don. It's are you going to consume content or create something? And that really drives which one you want.
And see, exactly. You guys make me feel so young. I appreciate you all.
Here we go.
I have had my iPad 3, which I'll call it an iPad 3. It's the new iPad. for about a year now, right? And the reason I got it is for graduate school. I'm not an overachiever like Dawn, getting two grad degrees, just one. By the way, congratulations again to you.
Thank you.
Because she just finished up. I'm just getting the one, right? And so the reason for that was twofold. First of all, it was a use case for me. It was an expensive use case, but it was a use case. I saved about $300 in book fees. In other words, the books that I purchased to read on the iPad through the Kindle store. So using the Amazon Kindle store, I saved $300 in the price difference between the virtual one, the ebook version, and the physical one. All right. So let's say that then it cost me $200 for an iPad then, right? Well, not only did I do that, but I took all my notes on the iPad without an ancillary device. I used just the actual keyboard on purpose to see if I could do it. And I loved it. I really, really did. The only thing I'll say is that I didn't use the built-in Notes app. I bought something called Notes Plus, which my buddy Michael Drainer turned me on to. But it was an app. It wasn't a secondary device. It wasn't anything. It was simply a note program. And you can do it handwriting, but I chose to do typing because, well, my handwriting sucks. So, but it was fine. I liked it. And the only thing I haven't done on it yet is I haven't actually written a blog post yet. And I guess maybe that's where the content creation part comes in. Maybe that'll be my next test case to see whether or not it really does work for that. So,
well, and that's not to say that you can't use quote-unquote traditional tablets for content creation, because I mean, obviously you can. I have a first generation Kindle Fire. It's not even the new shiny, easy to use for productivity one. It's the old one. And I put it again, an app that lets you do notes and you do handwriting or typing. And so I have taken notes on it. I have used it for productivity.
All right, guys, from Mashable, technology ranks the world's most trusted industry ever. From Zoe, I think it's Zoe Fox. Let's just call it the person that wrote this, Zoe, because it's Zoe. Basically saying that technology is the most ever, and that's 2 years running. George, should it be? Because, and the reason I'm asking is because we've talked an awful lot in the last, half an hour about things like, bring your own device and the unimaginable uncertainty in bringing your own device. You worked for a company at one time, a control manufacturer who, has been either praised or, demonized unfairly on both ends, actually, because other ancillary devices don't work with them. Should technology be the most trusted industry?
Depends on how you take it, I suppose. I mean, there could be the foreboding one that says you shouldn't trust it at all because they know everything about you now and they're soon to take over the Skynet system thingy, right?
Yeah.
that thingy. Sorry. But you know what? Reading the article and thinking about it for a day or so, the reason that pops at it to me, and the article mentions this, is that it anticipates needs and satisfies a desire for gaining something, particularly here, information or content.
Yeah.
So technology, I think, in these people's views that took this 20-minute survey. So we're not talking about people who idly answered a question. They went through a 20-minute survey. Yeesh. it breaks the 3-second rule.
It wasn't a SurveyMonkey one, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So these are people, I guess, who thought about it and got through the end of it. That's what I think they're seeing here, is that I trust it because they're always giving me the answer I need and it's providing me with the information to make it correct. And I think a neat correlation, a trust in the technology providers, say like search engines, in an industrialized world and an emerging market, was really weighted differently. The emerging markets, the non-traditional first world stuff, were up to like 50 or 60% trusting what they got and how they got it. Mm-hmm. And us, jaded, first worlders were like, not so much. I don't trust anything I read. So, I can see that differential. And yes, for the most part, I think they should be trusted. Now, whether or not you're trusting the tech support people or the infrastructures that made it, that's a different story.
And it depends on which office I call. If I call Chicago. All right. Dawn, the goddess of marketing, let's put that head on for you. seriously, because this is something you could take and run with. Should it be, should we be the world's most trusted industry?
Compared to some of the other industries that were ranked, like financial services and media,
that's a gimme.
Energy. pharmaceutical.
Do financial services even make it?
Yes, at the bottom.
You know, compared to all those people, heck yeah, we should be trustworthy, you know? I think the thing is, there's a couple different ways to look at trust. First is trusting your provider. And I think as an industry, we're very good people for the most part. You always have a few trunk slammers and always have a few idiots that are just out for a buck. But for the most part, the people that I've run into in the industry, do your things work? Genuinely tend to care if your needs are being met by their products. And I think we need to value that and market that as an industry and not squander it. And I say don't squander it because I saw another thing from either Mashable or TechCrunch yesterday that, you know, said the biggest ripoffs in technology. And one of them was Best Buy selling a not so extremely long HDMI cable for over $1,000.
But it has antivirus protection in it.
It doesn't matter.
Does it have arrows?
Does it have arrows pointing which way the electrons go?
You can make crap up all day long.
Do I need wooden blocks for it?
Oh, jeez.
That's the kind of thing that distrust in industry, you know, when you're like blatantly ripping people off. And the point that the article had made was not only are they selling it for over $1,000, but that exact same cable length, model number, everything was available from another source for like $50.
Yeah.
You know, so things like that. We don't want to squander it. We want to keep that trust that people are giving us inherently as an industry and as a field, you know, not just AV industry, but like all of technology. It's awesome that we're number one. But, you know, people are still a little naive sometimes about technology. That whole commercial with the, I read it on the internet. Mm-hmm. You can't put anything on the internet that's not true. You know? Bonjour, I'm a French model. Like, you shouldn't trust that. I'm, you know, just if anyone's listening and you believe that everything on the internet's true because it's technology,
I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you.
Yeah, exactly. But I think from a marketing standpoint, we can totally take advantage of this study and let people know. And as people in the industry, both as manufacturers and integrators and consultants, we need to A, take advantage of the survey, but also B, don't abuse the results of the survey and give us a black eye. We want to stay at the top of the list.
You know, John, when you're talking, it made me think about, they didn't get granular. They sort of just said technology. Now, jumping in here, my opinion is that the financial people should have been at the bottom of that sinkhole in Brazil that no one can see the end of, you know, that happened in the middle of a town. But I bet you if they got granular, like, okay, in technology, do you trust, say, your cell provider? I'm sure you would see a very low mark, or cable companies. You would see a very low mark. So once you get inside of the technology, I think you get a wide diversity of opinions on what exactly in technology is trusted and what is not.
But the fact, though, George, that the median, you know, the nominal level was higher than anybody else's, even including those couple of areas that I'm sure brought down our average, is remarkable. I mean, think about it.
True enough.
If cell companies weren't included in this number, how high would it have been?
Mm.
You know.
Well, and are the cell companies in our number? Or are they down with telecommunications a good 20 plus?
Yeah, that's good.
So.
Well, what's interesting is all of these metrics, all these things that they list, you know, with the percentages, they all use technology.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, I see.
Nowadays, what doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I looked at this and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool and this is interesting. But what it kind of really didn't, you know, as George is saying, you know, getting down to those granular things is you know, the value, you know, what is this value that it brings to customers and this is this why they're trusting it and look at that. You know, it's a very interesting study. I would have liked to have seen more of the information that they used to kind of get this, like some of the questions that they used in this 20-minute survey to develop this, because I think that would have given us a lot more of an idea of you know, what these things are and how they're kind of gauging this level of trust and getting these numbers.
No, and that's a good thing too. A good point, but seeing what exactly they were asking and how they were how they spent their 20 minutes. So
exactly.
All right, guys, from CNET, this comes from Danny Sullivan. Keep your Blu-rays. You Damn Dirty Apes, and DVDs too. I've gone digital. George, this I'll kick it off with you because you're one of the more vocal people I know. And I go back to the quote from the head of Netflix, who, in case you didn't know, said by 2020, we will be out of the DVD business. Do you think Mr. Reed Hastings was conservative, or was he very liberal in that estimation based on this guy's article about him going all ones and zeros?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think we'll see it sooner than later. You know, I love this article, but if you were on Twitter a couple of days ago, there was a really awesome debate between Andrew Robinson, I forget which magazine he's from. I'm sorry, Andrew. One of the home theater magazines. And John, and I never get his name right. I'm sorry, John.
Siaka?
Siaka. About whether or not the physical media was still going to be there. And Andrew Robinson, and he wrote competing blog articles, and you have to find them. We'll put them up on the show link, where they just went after each other about this in a good-natured way. But it was a great debate about whether or not physical media was important. And it basically came down to this. Just like this article we were talking about, the trials and tribulations of getting his digital copy, how often were you going to use the physical copy wasn't really the issue, as it was who owns it. Mm-hmm. And the physical media people are, I own it. It's always in my possession. They can't take it away from me, short of knocking down the door with the FBI SWAT team. And their point of being, you know, you guys who want your digital, remember the Kindle, remember the 1984 book that was taken off without your permission, even though you bought it. They didn't have the rights to it, but they took it off. They can do the same. And I think that's where the argument still is for the physical disc. And John still argues for that there's yet another rev of physical media to come that will further delay the streaming or digital only content. But I'm the opinion that that's not going to happen, because I haven't bought a disc nor received a disc from anyone in 8 years.
Wow. Real quick, Andrew writes for hometheaterreview.com.
Thank you.
And the fact that it was the 1984 book that got taken off the Kindle is incredibly ironic.
Yes.
George makes a good point. He hasn't bought a disc in 8 years. And I would almost be with him if I hadn't recently purchased the Star Wars. I don't know what a double trilogy is, but I bought all six discs. It was one whole package, and it was for my kids so I can introduce them into Star Wars. Now, I should have waited around.
Revisionist.
I don't have a choice. I don't.
If you look down the bowels of the internet, you will find the originals somewhere.
Actually, I have a student in one of my classes who has offered to give me at least the episodes of 4, 5, and 6, the original DVDs from that. So, anyhow.
Well, better that than their minds get corrupted by the cartoon version that's out there. So,
hey,
at least you're a semi-purist.
Or Jar Jar Binks. But continuing on. Don, is you know, are we there yet? Like George said, it's not any day now, but sooner rather than later. Or are all these other legal mumbo jumbo issues going to keep the two different camps between John and Andrew? Where, you know what? Give me my, you'll get the media out of my cold dead hands, or you know, everybody's living in a utopia, and I'll just take the digital.
I mean, I'm more in the first camp. I personally will buy the disc. Now, granted, most of the discs I've bought over the past few years have been the ones that included a digital download copy. Mm-hmm. And like the author of the article we're discussing, it's usually a pain in the tuchus to try to get that digital copy. Honestly, it's far easier to just, pardon me, sorry, copyright people, but it's easier to just to rip a copy and stick it on my phone or my tablet than it is to redeem the damn physical thing that the code that they gave me that, you know, it's supposed to work easily. It does not, you know, so they could make it far less of a hassle, but I'll still buy the disc. You know, I like the digital copies. It's not the end of the world if I don't have it on my tablet, because I'm going to watch it on my big screen, you know, unless I'm on a plane or a bus or something where, you know, I just don't have access to that. You know, which again, it was a conversation that came up in yesterday's AV chat, you know, watching some of these great movies with these great special effects on your phone or your tablet is just an affront to the people that spend all their time and energy creating the film and the effects that you're watching. You know, better that than not watch it at all, I guess. But, you know, so when you're on a plane, watch it digitally. But for the most part, like, watch it big screen. That's what they're designed for, you know? And buying the disc lets you do that. You could download it and play it through a player on your big screen, but I want to own my thing, you know? I want to have it in the basement so that my kids and my grandkids have to, like, clean it out when I die, like I do with, you know, grandma's records and
Holy
things.
Cow.
And 8mm films. That's the kind of what you do.
Why did she buy the trilogy for, you know, Saw?
I think there's like 8 of those films, okay, not well, a trilogy. Yeah. But and besides, if we didn't keep buying the physical copies, why would I own like 7 or 8 copies of the Star Wars trilogy? Because my husband keeps buying them every time a new media comes out. That's why. But
and that's,
you know,
why I like Harry.
It's part of the fun, though, right?
Yes, it is. And you know what? Every time George Lucas will do something different to it.
It's not George Lucas anymore.
Well, that's true. Yeah, now it'll be...
it's Mickey.
I almost said a Michael Eisner. Wow.
J.J. Abrams.
J.J.'s doing the episode 7. Adrian, I kind of did this. Again, I do experiments with like this. I purchased the Game of Thrones, the season 1. Strictly digital, just to get the experience. I did it on Amazon, not because I'm anti-Apple. I have an iPad. And I kind of wrestled whether or not to do the iTunes version or the Amazon version. And so I've got it on Amazon, right? And I'm watching it via my Xbox because they have a player there. And I'm also watching it on my iPad, doing what Don said, you know, watching it kind of on both. And you know what? I don't miss the DVD. I don't. I know that's weird, and especially, you know, being someone of our age, but I don't miss having to replace the disc, because I can't tell you how many times I've bought Cars or Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 because my children think that they're Frisbees. And maybe that's where I'm coming from, too. You know, I'm tired of buying, you know.
So, that's why you buy the digital copy and you BYOD.
There you go.
My thing has always been that when you purchase digital content, you in theory don't really own it. You're renting it. Hmm. And that's how it is. When you purchase a physical copy, you actually have ownership of that. When it's digital, well, how do you clarify ownership of something that's digital? Is it a key? Is it a code? Is it, you know, do I download it and I've got something physical on a hard drive? You know, what happens if the hard drive dies? You know, can I get it again? I mean, that's kind of been this painful, growing pain with certain digital pieces of media. You know, a couple years back, I purchased an album through iTunes. And for whatever reason or other, I had a hard drive fail, and that content was on that hard drive. It was corrupted. And this is before the Apple allowed you to re-download something you had purchased. So what did I have to do? I had to prove to Apple that I owned it so I could re-download it again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have that, you know, sort of a physical medium of some sort. And that's kind of always, I mean, I read this article, I'm like, I've had that exact same, you know, gripe. You know, I've had that pain, especially since I'm a... You know, all of my digital content sits in the iTunes ecosystem. So, you know, stuff that's ultraviolet doesn't work for me. So if I buy a physical content and it has, oh, cool, digital. Oh, but it's ultraviolet. Great. It doesn't work for me. You know, so now I have to, you know, either find a way to get it ripped so I can have something digital so I can put it on the kids' iPads or push it where I want to push it and watch it how I want to watch it. Right. And, you know, that's, I think, a lot of the frustration. You know, I think that if we look who've got it right now, it's Disney. Because if you buy, you know, a physical piece of media from Disney for one of their movies, you get a Blu-ray version. You could get a 3D mm-hmm. Blu-ray version. You get the DVD version. And, oh, yeah, you have your digital download of whatever that is.
Which is, honestly, I wish that they would all take a page out of that and say, you know.
Yeah, I wish everybody would do that, because now what does that let me do? Okay, I can stick it on my Blu-ray player and watch it. I can take the disc and throw it in the car for the kids' DVD player and they can watch it. Or I can push the digital content where I want to put it on the kids' iPads, the iPhones, you know, whatever device it is. And I'm covered, and, you know, we've got that movie that the kids like that, you know, we can go send them off to do what their own thing is and watch our shows without them bothering us.
And then I had to buy 10 copies of Toy Story. So.
Exactly, right. Because you have it in the format you need to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, the frustrating thing about a lot of this is not being able to, you know, I have kind of display it how I want to display it, put it where I want to put it, and utilize it how I need to use it as a consumer. And every time these companies throw up either a check or a balance or some way to restrict that, it's a frustration. So what do I as a consumer do, or what many other consumers do? They try to find that outside of the normal systems, and then we get run into these issues with, you know, getting content in alternative methods. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing regarding the digital versus hard copy sort of issue that not a lot of people bring up, and we don't bring it even up on the show very often, is not just a matter of who owns the material, but also what's going to become of that material down the road. We don't talk about this a lot, but with our heavier and heavier reliance on everything, we're losing inordinate amounts of history. You know, if you go to the Middle East or certain parts of Mesoamerica, you know, certain parts of Europe, you can look at a wall and see carvings and have history that's been there for thousands of years. And if you go and try to find tweets from, you know, 3 years ago, unless you have some very specialized software, it's gone. You have no record of that. You know, and I mean, you have things like the Library of Congress has started archiving tweets and things like that. But, you know, when you're talking about entertainment or music or movies, you know, I can take my mom's old vinyl records and find or build a player and you can still hear that music. But if I lose my iTunes library or something, where did that music go? I mean, it exists. Yeah, I know. But just think generations down the road, you know, are we going to have all of this art and all of this creativity and all of this knowledge available? And the answer is, if we do everything digitally and don't figure out some way to archive it for the future, no, we're not.
And then, you know, conversely to that end, though, there's a lot of old Mississippi Delta blues and folk music that would have never made it past the vinyl records going away if the archivist didn't digitize it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of 12-string Mississippi, 12-bar Mississippi blue guys that you would never hear from again because it was two records, but it's fabulous stuff.
Yeah, and that you know, when we look at saving content, I mean, there have been, I've read numerous articles and seen numerous documentaries about how every iteration of a new piece of technology, we lose the ability to access and review the previous technology. You know, there are, magnetic discs that we can't read anymore because guess what? Oh, we got rid of the device that reads it. And, you know, there's stores and stores of data that's been collected and now and put aside that, you know, we have no access to read anymore. You know, when we look at the Smithsonian and the Library of Congress, they have vast warehouses of players, parts and guts so that they can resurrect a machine to play something or to read something or to scan something that they have in storage for posterity's sake. It's an amazing thing, you know, the cold storage warehouses they have of VHS decks,
right?
You know, or UMAD reader, you know, machines and things like that. So that we can try to save some of these things. And when Dodd mentioned the tweets, I mean, I don't know if anyone had seen the article that it just came out a few weeks back that the Library of Congress is they found out that it's becoming near impossible for them to record and store the amount of tweets, you know, that come out of Twitter, because we just storing them and allocating them and categorizing them has become this insane task, because the amount of data that we're sharing and sending on a daily basis.
Well, and that kind of leads us into our last story. Atari's going bye-bye, maybe. This is vinyl. This is chapter 11. Vinyl is as final as chapter 11 is. Because I've known people that file for bankruptcy two or three times. But they have it's going bye-bye unless somebody buys up the rights to it. The one thing about Atari, and this is just as a total geek, and I'm not an Apple fanboy, but I appreciate Apple and what they've done. If you've ever read the Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, this was one of Steve Jobs' first jobs. That's kind of weird to say. back in the 70s, he used to work for the Atari guys, and there's a lot of there's still a lot of good things going on. You're talking about, you know, Pong and the Breakout, and, you know, like I said earlier, the Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and all the good games that kind of led us to where we are now, you know, with Halo. So, a moment of silence, I guess, for Atari. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Mr. Adrian Boyd, the senior systems designer at Avitech. Thank you.
You're welcome.
How can people get a hold of you, find you, follow you, stalk you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. I haven't been as prolific as a Twitterer recently, but I am the AV CAD guy on Twitter, which is the_AV_CAD_guy. And they can find me at Vector Sketch, which is still around. I have a blog there that I try to maybe write every once in a while. And everywhere else in the tubes and the interwebs.
In the interwebs, all right. Mr. George Tucker, the engineering coordinator for World Stage, where can people find you, kind sir?
I am the social media whore. I'm everywhere. But I'm Tucker Tuesday on...
Wow.
I am Tucker Tuesday on Twitter. It's Tucker's Tuesday.typepad, because I'm too cheap to buy a URL. You can find me on Chris Nato's Red Band Bloggers for his AV Shout, Technology Tell, and Mad Ramblings in various and sundry places. Buy me a drink and I'll tell you more.
All right. And the goddess of all AV marketing and tenor drums, and I'll explain that now. A couple weeks ago, my lovely bride and I got the chance to hang out with the Meads. The day that one Miss Dawn Mead won in the pipe at Winter Storm, a very nice tenor drum.
Yes.
Yay.
It's very exciting.
So, awesome. So you're at NetAV. Tell people how they can find you, ma'am.
Well, the company site is net-av.com. I also have my own blog, avdawn.com, and I'm on Twitter, at avdawn, and a bunch of other places. I do want to just quick plug. I recently updated avdawn.com to include appearances because I'm suddenly teaching and speaking at a bunch of things over the next 6 months. So check it out. And if you're at any of those events or want to come to any of those events, come say hi to me. I'm always glad to talk to folks.
Look at you go.
Right?
Being a speaker and a talker and a teacher stuff. That's cool.
Theoretically.
Yeah. I'm nothing. All right. my name is Tim Albright, if you'd like to follow me. TD, Tim David Albright, ALBRIGHT on Twitter. But more importantly for me and everybody here at AV Nation, please go by the website, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. You'll find this show and others at the education show we do called EdTech Live Life, the DIY show, all sorts of other things. I've recently started a weekly blog, and I am 3 weeks into keeping to my New Year's resolution of doing a weekly blog, dadgummit. And I have one written already for next Monday, so it looks like at least four in a row. Also check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, Google Plus, and others. But go by the website, avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. That's all the time we have for AV Week.